From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is found in a series of color-coded alerts. Different states have different ways of describing the threat of COVID-19, a threat not just to human health, but to a healthcare system that is becoming overwhelmed in some areas. Code orange, code black, code red, whatever the color system, we know this. COVID cases are spiking, and hospitals are trying to figure out how to handle it. And as a result, Governor Andrew Cuomo has already moved to tighten up the avenues for transmission. That means limiting business openings, if not outright closures. Back in May, we had a conversation with a small business owner in Rochester, and he said that we had to get the phased reopening right at the time because, he said, if we got to shut down again, he's not sure his business will survive it. And he's not alone. But this virus is back, and it's killing more than 1,000 Americans every day. Congress is debating what to do to make sure American workers can get through the next 4 months. And so far, the U.S. Senate in particular is stalled at an impasse. Tomorrow, we will focus on restaurants and bars and their industry in particular. Today, we focus on other small businesses, how they're doing, and what they need next. I'll welcome our guests now. Charles Moreland is the co-owner of the Rochester Parkour Gym. Charles, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Erica Walther is the owner of Juniper Gifts and Local Art. Erica, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Tanvi Asher is the owner of Peppermint Boutique. Tanvi, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
I want to listen, if we could. Do we have Kirsten Gillibrand, Rob? We've got Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. So I want to just to listen a little bit of what she had to say, because this weekend in New York City, Senators Schumer and Gillibrand, of course, both Democrats, held a brief news conference in which they expressed their frustration with colleagues in the Senate who are not getting something done when it comes to relief for individuals, for small businesses, for targeted business industries. So there's a wide range of menu options there. But Senator Gillibrand says that, number one, for months, Senator Mitch McConnell didn't really want to do a deal and said so. And then in order to move forward, she said that Senator McConnell keeps putting what she calls poison pills in various forms of legislation to help businesses and individuals. And by that, she means an obsession with insurance and liability and not actual help for people. Here is some of what she had to say this weekend.
As New Yorkers and other cities implement new safety restrictions and outdoor dining becomes less feasible in winter weather, helping our small businesses, restaurants, and theaters will be vital to our survival and the city's survival. Additionally, Congress has to provide more relief directly to families. That includes having a real national paid leave policy, because we are still the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't have access to paid leave.
That is Senator Kirsten Gillibrand this weekend in New York City, but talking in general about her frustration with Congress and the U.S. Senate's inability to get something done. So as we go throughout the hour, I'm going to give our guests a chance to talk about how they see the government's action or inaction, or what has been done and whether it has worked at all. But I want to just start by asking our guests to give you the landscape of their business, how they're doing, what the limitations are, and how they see the next few months. I'll start with Charles. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, so since we last spoke, we had the upcoming reopenings, and being in the fitness industry, we've got all of these new restrictions and regulations that we have to follow. And the hardship for us is just trying to get information and the perspective out there to people that just because a business is open doesn't mean that they're doing okay. And so, for instance, my worst fear was that they were going to allow our business to reopen. And if we were allowed to reopen, then we should reopen. It kind of no getting around that. And then they were just going to pat themselves on the back and do nothing. And that's essentially what has been happening. We have the incredibly strict policies on what we're allowed to do, how far we're allowed to go. And to be quite frank, none of it is profitable. And so every month that we continue to stay open during these restrictions, we continue to lose money. And that's probably the most challenging frustration that we've had to deal with as a small business. And then just kind of sit back and wonder, how long will it be until the supposed relief comes, until anybody comes through and makes a change or, you know, does anything that helps progress along rather than what we're talking about right now, which is the possible soon to come shutdown, if there will be another shutdown as we move into Orange Zone. And so, it's been a struggle, and the way forward is still very much in the hands of our elected officials than it is on what specifically we can do, I guess.
Let me just probe a little bit of a couple of the themes you brought up there, Charles. First of all, when you say you're open but losing money, have you considered not being open at all?
If we are allowed to stay open, we have to stay open, if for no other reason than to keep the amount of money that we have trickling in still trickling in, because it staves off what would happen if we choose to be closed while, you know, if somebody's paying a gym membership and they like, we have an incredible community of people. We have a lot of people that have chosen to and willfully to keep their membership active all the way through the shutdown. At this point in time, we've had people that have continued to pay their membership. We don't do any contracts or anything, so this is all their own will. Have chosen to value us and say, we want to see you succeed. We want to see you there when, you know, the mythical time where this is all over and life goes back to normal, if that's even possible. And they want to be able to come to Park Origin. And they continue to do that. For every person like that, there's still two more that see this as a product. And they say, hey, I have this gym membership because I want to use it, but I can't use it. So I'm going to put that money elsewhere, and I will, in the back of my mind, hope that you're there when this is all over. So the challenge of closing despite being allowed open, like, we would lose more money and definitely would almost guarantee our bankruptcy in a way.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not at all judging individuals. A lot of people are on tight margins. I get it. But the reason, the scenario you're describing, Charles, is why I have kept my gym membership, even though I can't imagine going to a gym right now, because, I mean, I pay it every month, hoping that eventually I can get back in the gym. And I'm trying to work out at home. But I also know that every small bit sort of adds up there. So, I'm not judging those who've canceled because, everyone is in a slightly different circumstance. And I feel pretty fortunate right now. But I feel for you. And in a moment, we're going to talk about some of the government measures that you see on the county and then maybe the state and national level. But let me get your colleagues in here in different businesses. Tanvi Asher is the owner of Peppermint Boutique. Tanvi, why don't you remind listeners what Peppermint is and kind of set the landscape for what life has been like for you during the pandemic?
Hi. So thanks for having me. We're a women's boutique, so our target audience is kind of the age of like 20 to 30 younger women. Either they're straight out of college or just starting a new job. So we provide very accessible apparel, accessories, and our store is kind of very well known for a very, very awesome Rochester gift section. So we have everything from, you know, mugs and little Rochester tchotchkes, like keychains and things like that. And we've been in business since 2011, and we're located at the Culver Road Armory. And, you know, when the shutdown first happened, which was like right around March 15th, ever since I started the business, we've had a pretty decent online following. And so we went straight to online, and, you know, I kind of put every single, as you would say, egg in the basket of online shopping. And, you know, I got the help of a couple of my friends who are very good with the back end of, making sure that Shopify, which is basically our provider, is working and everything is in order. It was, you know, I never thought we would shut our doors like that, though. That initial shock kind of, you know, stayed with me for a good solid week and a half. But like Charles said, you know, we have an incredible community, and everybody was willing to shop local and willing to, you know, take that first step of making sure that the business you love is still around after all this is over. So the first month that it happened, we actually had an incredible month. I mean, so much so that I was like, maybe we should not have a storefront. Like, this is fine, you know? But as soon as there was talks again that maybe we would reopen, things started to plummet again. So it's been a mixed bag. I was able to bring some employees back to help me with online orders and, you know, things of that nature. But it's definitely been up and down, you know, and certainly people don't really have anywhere to go. So why would you need nice clothes? And so we kind of had to pivot the business to incorporate more comfort wear, lounge wear, things that can go from a Zoom call to Wegmans and back, you know. So thinking about it from that aspect of a customer. So it's definitely been a 360 in terms of making sure that the business can still be around. And in terms of support, I will say my landlord at the Armory is an amazing person. You know, the first thing he did was he's like, Tanvi, you do what you have to do. Don't worry about, you know, getting rent to me on time or whatever. I'm here to support you. Tell me what you need. So that's incredible too. So, you know, in some ways I feel really blessed that we're still here and, you know, still trying to kick it.
Do you, I guess I'm going to ask kind of a similar question that Charles was talking about. Do you get the sense that your clientele could make a kind of sort of a semi-permanent change throughout the pandemic, however long it goes, to make sure you're getting what you need? Or are you worried that you know, that support, you know, is sincere, but people are in a different spot and it's not going to last?
I'm 100% with him there that even though people's intentions are there, I don't think they have the means to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my target audience certainly has felt it. You know, my target customer is a lot of the girls that shop in our store, the women that shop in our store, they work in the restaurant industry. And if their restaurants aren't open as much, I definitely haven't seen them in the store, you know. And, you know, even though they want to help, they don't know how to help or they don't have the means to help. And so that initial, you know, I was able to get some of the PPP, and I know you're going to touch on it. Some of that help is already, we've already depleted it. So unless we have a better plan coming from our leaders, I certainly don't know what's going to happen. I think we'll be hopefully okay through, I'm hoping, Christmas, but after that, it remains to be seen.
Okay. Erica Walther is the owner of Juniper Gifts and Local Art. Why don't you set the sort of the scene for our listeners who don't know Juniper as well, Erica, and tell us how you've been doing.
Well, Juniper is in Irondequoit, and we sell home decor and gifts and, you know, local artists' work. But we're a brand new business. Our slated opening was for March, end of March. So everything got pushed, and in the beginning, I was just trying to build up the brand and getting people aware of it by gaining more of a social media following and getting my online shop more established because it really wasn't there. So in the first few months, as people were starting to find out about us and our story, people were very supportive. It obviously was not enough, but it was helpful to have people buying things online and then picking them up or even I was delivering them. And then we did officially open our doors June 15th. And, you know, just was just trying to see how that would go as a brand new business.
Well, most people don't plan to start during a pandemic, and I admire you. I mean, I'm really, you know, feeling for all business owners right now. How would you say the last 5-6 months have gone versus your expectations?
Well, I mean, overall, I threw every expectation out the window. So I would say all in all, it's been pretty positive. The reaction from the community has been really great. It's been growing. You know, I'll never know what it would have been like, obviously. So I'm just trying to take it day by day, week by week, and going with the wins that are happening, which is people sharing it on social media, people coming in. I've had many people have been in the shop 2, 3, 4 times. And even in the past couple weeks, a lot of people have come in and a lot of them say, I've been trying to get in here. you know, I'm so glad I'm finally here, and I really appreciate the effort. And when I decided to start the shop in 2019, I did that a lot of because I do have faith in the community that people really do value small business, and they're showing it. And I, you know, me and my family really appreciate it.
Well, let me ask all three of you then, if you think government understands just how severe the situation could get for small business owners throughout this coming winter. Erica, do you think, in generally speaking, do you think government understands how serious this issue is?
No. No, I don't. I don't think you can really know unless you've been there. I don't think the average person does understand unless maybe they're they're self-employed, maybe they don't have a storefront or something. But I think it's hard for anybody unless you've done it or had experience how much money it takes to run a business. And every business is different, but it's always more expensive than you think it's going to be. So, you know, like Charles said, people think that just maybe because you're open, that, okay, now everything is good, but it doesn't really work like that. And I think for me, I'm in a little bit of a unique position, obviously, because I have no track record. All I had was projections. But I worry about the future and what the aftermath of this is going to be. How many people are going to be unemployed? How many people aren't going to have the flexible income? And, you know, what does that entail for the next maybe year or two of the fallout of this?
Tanvi, do you think government gets it?
100% they don't. I think that if they got it, I think help would have already, you know, been there and it probably should have been there all along. Even if we were open, I think there should have been little trickles of support that should have been coming in, you know, whether it be financial or, you know, trying to find us employees that would be willing to come in and help, or, you know, at least even set the stage for what guidelines should be. Because when they let us open, there weren't really very clear guidelines on how many people or anything. You know, my staff and I, we went on CDC's website and then we took the square footage of the store and then, you know, we kind of mapped it out and said, oh, okay, well, we can only have 8 people in the store at a time. I mean, I feel like these are things that should have been readily available as a resource to businesses, you know, and there should have been more support. And I think, you know, some mental health support would be great. I can't tell you how much wine I've consumed just because I don't know what else to do, you know? So I think I think that the government definitely doesn't get it. I think we're ordinary people and these are challenges that we didn't think we would ever have to face. And so here we are. I'm cautiously optimistic, but, you know, I'm also running out of steam.
Yeah, Tanvi, on the comment about wine, wine shops and liquor shops are one of the rare businesses doing better during the pandemic than otherwise. and you know, we can kind of laugh at that because we all sort of get it. And every month has been like a holiday month for many of the stores that I've talked to. I'm also not making light of that because I know that some medical professionals are concerned about an increase in alcoholism, and we're going to talk about that in the weeks to come on this program, especially as we head for the winter and the holidays, because I know it's tough. But that's a small business industry that's doing really well. But to Tanvi's point, Charles, do you think government gets it?
I think the larger you go, the less they get it. And what I mean by that is that on the small local county level, I think that Monroe County is doing the best out of everybody at understanding the challenges that a small business has and doing whatever they can to get some form of assistance out there, which is to say Monroe County is the only form of government so far that has provided grant opportunities as opposed to more and more debt and loans to help pay for our monthly recurring expenses during these shutdowns and during a time where financial stability isn't possible. On some of those, for instance, the Monroe County Fast Forward program was announced. Nothing's come of that yet, but at least they offered the ability for a small business to apply for it. And again, it's a grant and not a loan. the second you step up to a state level, everything's a loan, and the red tape that's around it is honestly a little laughable and shocking and not helpful to most small businesses, probably any small business that I understand or know. And then definitely on a federal level, not a chance, not at all.
Okay, so let's talk about those different levels here. And listeners, if any of this rings true with you, whether you're, maybe you work for a small business or you're concerned about your job or you're a small business owner, we'd love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We've gotten a significant number of emails from those in the small business community, including people like Charles, who are always glad to hear from pushing us to keep making sure that we've got you on the radar here. You can find us at connections@WXXI.org. So, Charles, let's work our way up, and we'll start local here. When you talk about the Fast Forward program with Monroe County, we talked about on this program recently, those are grants between $10,000 and $20,000, not a loan, not something you got to pay back, and they want to get hundreds of them out the door before the end of this year. I know you applied. What's that process like? Have they gotten back to you?
No. The most recent information I got, I did call because it was starting to get to like the 2 week since the deadline application. I called the office. I did get in contact with somebody who basically said that they have a small team reviewing applications. They've received over 2,300 applications, and when you consider how much money they have available for this grant program, not everybody that applied is going to get it, which you can understand. But she basically said that they have no time frame for when application acceptance letters will go out or how soon the money will go out. So right now we're just in a waiting pattern.
Let's say you've got the maximum, and my understanding is based on the size of your business, you're not likely to get 20K, but 15K, 20K, how much does that help you?
The 15,000 would help sustain us into probably the most it could sustain us to is the end of January.
It's not nothing, though.
It's not nothing. No, absolutely. And that's why I think that Monroe County is doing the most out of every form of government that I've attempted to reach out to at helping a small business like myself and others in the community to actually get them the sustenance that they need. Now, granted, whether or not that's just going to help us survive, whether or not it's going to help us get back to where we were, let's say in a wonderful world where a vaccine becomes available and life starts to get back to normal by the end of January, probably won't happen, but let's just hypothetically say it will. If there's no further assistance, let's say for our employees, that we still don't have all of our employees back. We don't, but we are shelling out money every single month that we are open. We can't bring everybody back. Every month that our employees stay on unemployment, they get closer and closer to finding another job. And if they find another job, they get set in a new industry. I don't necessarily know if I can pull them back. And so it takes a lot for a small business, especially in a niche industry like ours, to secure talent. And so if that talent goes away, it's going to take a lot of time to get back to where we were. And it's going to be a really lengthy struggle. And so whether just being able to survive until January, that's great. I can pay rent. I can cover some of the expenses using this grant money. But the road forward from there, it's a whole new world. So I don't know.
Tanvi, have you looked at Fast Forward from Monroe County?
Yes, I also applied for it. As soon as I found out, I probably applied within 24 hours. And just like Charles, I also called in and I was told the same thing that, they don't really have a timeline on this. And, I, as a woman of color and as a woman-owned business, I was hoping that, some of these factors would help accelerate the process a little bit more. But I do agree with him that in terms of getting any help, the fastest help has come from Monroe County. And actually, I did apply for a couple of city grants, and I did get one or two of them. So in that sense, the city did reach out because our business is in the city, and that was very helpful. And when there was additional funding, they did say, hey, there's a little bit more if you still want to apply for a little bit more. So I'm very thankful that at least, you know, on that level, people have come through. A lot of people do work at City Hall, do shop in the store, and they've come right up and said, hey, just wanted to let you know there might be some money, you know, go ahead and apply. But yeah, when you get to this, to any other level, they are all loans. And even though I did get a loan, I'm not touching it with a 10-foot pole unless we really, really have to, because I'm afraid I won't be able to pay it back, all things considered, you know?
Yeah. So that would be a scenario where Tanvi, you would say, okay, I'm not sure my business can survive this pandemic and you want me to take on more debt, and you could envision closing the business in the future and still having this debt to pay back, which is a worse scenario than you would even go in with. Is that fair?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly fair. And, you know, aside from Peppermint Boutique, I opened another boutique 2 years ago, so I have debt already from that one because, you know, any business takes time to grow. And as we were just growing and this all came around, so I kind of took 2 steps forward, 10 steps back. So that's been looming on my head, too, in terms of, okay, what are we going to do to keep both of them, you know, sustained? Obviously, profit is out of the question right now. We just need to make it through, break even, and just kind of keep going until, you know, something comes along and maybe like a brighter light comes along, mm-hmm. where I can kind of see like an actual profit turning again.
Sure. Tanvi, if you got the maximum from Monroe County's Fast Forward program, how much would that help you?
It would probably really help in terms of at least the payroll cost through December. You know, I have about 9 employees, and that alone is one of my biggest costs. So being able to keep them happy and, you know, just keep them at my business because I know they love it. It would really be helpful, and it would take me through Christmas for sure.
Erica Walther, let's talk about if there are options for you at Juniper. On the local level, have you pursued anything?
Yeah, so I am a third the local government. I was not able to qualify for PPP, so that was out of the question for me. But I did receive a small grant that was sponsored through the town of Irondequoit, and, you know, that it wasn't a lot of money, but it was more of a boost of morale to just, you know, it's maybe a couple months of bills. It just provided me a little bit of a cushion, and I did apply for the Fast Forward, and of course, I haven't heard also, but if I was to get that money, it certainly helps me moving forward, because Tanvi mentioned I'm new and I already have debt and, you know, loan to, you know, open the business itself, to get, you know, construction of the building, stuff like that. So I'm already behind the eight ball, you know, just starting out of the gate. So I am playing catch up severely with lost revenue. So.
Okay. How much would that loan, I'm sorry, that's not a loan, that'd be a grant. How much could that, from Monroe County, what kind of difference could that make for your business?
It would be a huge difference because it would help me balance the debt with the less revenue that's coming in and at least pay the bills. I mean, in the first year, maybe 2 years, you don't expect to turn a profit. But I don't, and I can't afford to sink further into debt because it would become a point where it's not worthwhile to keep the business open. So my goal is to just stay afloat and stick this out and hopefully get out on the other side and then deal with if we're, you know, in a recession or whatever that might be, but just get to a point where I don't have to close my doors.
We're talking to three small business owners, Erica Walther of Juniper Gifts and Local Art, Tanvi Asher, the owner of Peppermint Boutique, Charles Moreland's the co-owner of Rochester Parkour Gym, and we're talking to them about where their business stands as we head for a pandemic winter, which we hope is the last pandemic winter. I mean, there's really good vaccine news in recent days, but that doesn't mean that vaccines are going to be arriving and widespread before the end of the winter, and that means businesses are facing some real hard times, and government at the top levels and the federal level has not gotten anything done for months. And there's been sort of a mixed bag at state and local levels. So what happens next We're trying to keep our listeners informed of the reality here. We don't want anyone to be caught off guard if we see widespread closures of businesses this winter. We also want government leaders who listen to this program to hear these voices and know what's going on. After our only break of the hour, we'll get some of your feedback, and we'll talk to our guests about how they see some of that debate that Kirsten Gillibrand, a member of U.S. Senate, Senator Gillibrand was very critical of some of her colleagues in the Senate for not getting things done yet. We'll see what our guests have to say about that and more on the other side of this break. Coming up in our second hour, the Landmark Society has put out its annual list that they call the Five to Revive. Five buildings or institutions or historic sites that need new life or saving or community organizing or more funding. What are the five sites on the list? What would come to mind for you? We'll run down the list and meet the people behind them next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jonathan emails the program, says, question for your guests. Even though your business is open, if you're not able to make a profit, why is that? Are there any specific restrictions that are holding you back, or is it just people not coming out to your business at this time? That's from Jonathan. Charles, I'll start with you. Go ahead.
So the restrictions that we're dealing with basically make it like it was instituted as a bare minimum. We are operating under a 33% capacity. In the last 10 years of our business being open, 80% of our revenue is generated during prime time hours, which are between 4:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. We cannot fit that many people in a paying capacity given our capacity restrictions and the volume restrictions that we have at play. Trying to allow for all the social distancing on top of our mask policy and everything else. Being able to offer classes during those timeframes is extremely challenging. And again, it's like we are operating in a capacity that cannot be sustainable. And we made that choice just to at least get people moving again, to be an open establishment that could serve the community in whatever form or capacity we were able to, as we waited for new restrictions to hopefully open up. And again, they are not going that way, and the trajectory is only looking closer and closer at the possibility that our gym has to shut down once again. Okay. And so that's basically the struggle that we're going through.
Okay, Tanvi?
So our issue is that, you know, we don't want people to take their masks off at any given point. So, you know, at some point we've kept our fitting rooms closed so people can't try anything. And that really deters people from wanting to purchase clothing items as well. I mean, like I said earlier, there's already an issue with people, you know, they have nowhere to go. So why would they need new clothes? And the little that they are buying, they're unable to try. And so that deters people. And then we're also operating at a limited capacity. I can tell you that on weekends, we just lock the door and we have people waiting at the door because they're trying to shop. And I have limited staff, so I have to limit my hours. So I'm open shorter hours. So, I mean, you know, it's all cyclical. So that's kind of where my problem is, that I can't have as many people in, as many people aren't coming in. If they are coming in, you know, I can't let them try some items and things of that nature. We've also had a little bit of a supply chain problem. A lot of our items, even though locally made or made by artists, they can't get their supplies. So everything I needed for Christmas is just arriving, you know, so it's really messy when you think about it from that macro scale, that it's not just being open, you know. And when we open, I don't want to just sell things that I had from March. I wanted new merchandise. So it's just, I could go on and on. There's just so many reasons why this is such a difficult situation.
Erica, how about you?
Well, from my standpoint, just trying to build a brand new business in a pandemic, it's just, you know, this poses a ton of challenges. I mean, I wasn't able to have a big grand opening. A lot of the things that would gather some sort of crowds, of course, couldn't happen. And part of my business model was workshops. I have a space in the store where I had a whole schedule of workshops that were going to take place, and I had to take that whole portion out of my business model, which means revenue. And so that, you know, again, I'm in a different situation with being new, but the projection for the loss of revenue there is tens of thousands of dollars. So just the events portion and try having to cut back on the number of people that can be in the store has been a difficult when trying to build the model that I had originally envisioned.
All right. So let me work through a little bit more listener feedback. and listeners, it's connections@wxxi.org if you want to email the program. Edward says, Evan, what happens if a small business owner gets sick or injured or hospitalized themselves, even perhaps incurring major medical expenses? Erica, do you worry about that?
Oh, I worry about that all the time. I mean, I've been in real estate 18 years, so I just because I'm new at this, being self-employed, you know, you are the person that goes out and makes the money, and this shop is the same idea. I mean, I don't have any employees right now because the people that I was set to hire all, you know, I had to obviously they didn't even come on. And who I have helping me now is my mom and my mother-in-law. You know, so if I'm sick or something happens, I'm in a world of hurt, literally and figuratively.
Tanvi?
Oh, you know, it's funny. We just had a situation last week where our general manager actually cut her finger at work and I had to send her home, and I thought I was going to lose my mind, you know, between staffing and just even, you know, on a busy day losing one of my core staff members. But losing her made me realize I should probably just bubble wrap myself and, you know, not go anywhere. But I think more than me, my employees worry about me not being around because, I mean, I hold it all together for them. And, you know, we're very close. So I worry about that every day, that if something happens to me or, God forbid, I do get the virus and I have to quarantine for 14 days, then how do we continue this, you know? But, yeah, that's also a daily scare for us. But, you know, the only saving grace is, like I said, I do have an online presence, so we could keep shipping orders from the warehouse or something. It wouldn't be the same, but, it, you know, it would be something.
Mm. What about you, Charles?
If my wife or I were to either sustain a major injury or contract COVID, it would quite literally be the knife in our back that ends up closing the business. Right now, so I haven't taken a paycheck in 2 months. My wife dropped her pay to the same as our only other employee. There's only two households that are in the gym and operating it as we go through. And so having one household out of the picture would be traumatic. If it was our household, my wife and I, it would honestly probably force the business to close. We don't have health insurance. There's literally no support structure left. So, yeah.
Edward, thank you for that email. It's a fair and a good question, and it just further demonstrates just how on the knife's edge so many of these small businesses are, and that's assuming good health for them. So a lot of different factors could take things in a very difficult and painful direction for them. So let's talk about how they see what's going on at the federal level. We've talked about local efforts on the Monroe County level. We heard earlier this hour Senator Kirsten Gillibrand saying that she is frustrated with her colleagues, that there had to have been by now more support, more relief, and that goes in a lot of different directions. She's talking about paid leave. She's talking about support for businesses that are struggling or forced to close or asked to close. She's talking about the kinds of ideas that have been proposed at least as a sort of temporary thing. I'm not talking about UBI or a monthly check, but maybe another round of stimulus checks. There's a wide range of things that she says could be done and have not been done for months now. Charles, what's on that list? Take me through your thoughts on what Congress, what the U.S. Senate has been doing or not doing, and how that sort of hits you as a business owner, and then if you're going to set the policy agenda for them, what it looks like.
I think the ultimate thought and concept that I keep coming back to is when I look at the news and information coming out on the potential for a second round of relief, it's Democrats blaming Republicans and it's Republicans blaming Democrats. And like complete personal politics aside, as a small business that is struggling and attempting to survive through this, and knowing that we provide a very useful, wonderful service to our community, everybody needs to stop bickering and they need to just do something. Something needs to come through, and the longer that they keep pointing a finger and blaming, it's us that get hurt, and it's going nowhere, and something needs to be done. What I would be looking at doing if I were in charge is more of what Monroe County is doing. The understanding that you can't just burden a small business that you forced to shut down by stacking on more and more debt that they may or may not be able to pull through afterward, or to even shove that on a small business owner in this time frame is honestly laughable a little bit. And to force us to kind of decide, okay, can I survive long enough to get back on track? Will I be able to get on a timeline that can actually pay back this loan in the time frame that it's supposed to? Honestly, the question is, do I take this out and hope for the best, or you know, do I take this out and possibly risk bankruptcy, and now I have to still pay this loan back and kind of solidify my family's poverty for however long it takes. So it's a challenge.
All right, Tanvi, how do you see what's going on or not going on at the federal level? How does that hit you as a small business owner, and what would be on your list of policy ideas?
I'm with Charles there too. Like, it's so frustrating to watch the news. I mean, it's always bureaucracy between, you know, both at all levels, and the person paying the price is eventually us. You know, it's always worse caught in between all this. And I'm every day I tell my husband, I'm like, I don't understand why this is so hard. Like, I'm here, I'm unable to pay, I'm behind bills. It's very obvious because we're getting notices, and yet the loan that we've already received, which we haven't used, I already have bills for it. Like, we've been asked to pay it back. I haven't even used it yet. So if you can get on my case to pay back something that I haven't used yet, then why can't you give me something that I can actually use? And so, you know, if this were up to me, the first thing I would do is give us some rent relief, you know. Try to find a way to, you know, secure some sort of funds that would help us with some of our large expenses. And I don't want another loan. I want a grant, or I want some weekly, you know, whether it be a stipend or like some sort of help, because, you know, numbers prove that we're obviously the curve is not going up. It's either flat or going down. So, I mean, it's beyond frustrating to watch the news and see that every day there's nothing, while we're still here every day trying to work and trying to, you know, make amends and trying to keep with the rules and, you know, and keep community in mind. So if as a small business owner, I can keep community in mind, then why is it that at a leadership level, they can't think for us in the same manner?
Erica, how do you see it?
Yeah, I've just been disappointed in the lack of cooperation amongst the centers. It just seems like everything's gotten too politicized in this topic. And, you know, I think that if you really kind of thought of the regular guy out there who's being affected by the shutdowns, and then there would have been more done. I mean, there are big companies that have benefited from the pandemic. Jeff Bezos has made $48 billion between March and June on the pandemic. But, you know, for everybody else out there who's deeply affected financially, and in turn, you know, the communities are going to suffer. And I think that if more people understood just how much the small business means to the community, I mean, how when people spend money in a small business, that more of their money stays in the community, that if the small businesses are gone, then there's no growth. Then people leave. They're not going to raise their families and things like that. They're not going to move into those communities because there's no businesses, there's no restaurants, there's no place to go. And I think more people would be really, truly upset at that nothing has happened in terms of relief. if they really get down deep into the details about what is my town and my city going to look like if half of these businesses are gone.
Yeah, it sounds like our guests are frustrated with government and they're not really interested in whether there's a D or an R in front of the name. They see the lack of inaction at the federal level and they are tired of it. And so as we move towards the final minutes here, I want to ask all three of you, we know that for the most part, chains are going to survive. That doesn't mean there aren't local franchise owners, and I know a lot of people work for chain businesses and corporations, and that's fine. I understand that. But in New York City alone, we're seeing individual one-off restaurants close while the chain restaurants are hanging in. We're seeing that trend in other industries as well. And all three of you are doing something that I think adds to the fabric of our local Rochester community, given your creativity and the work you've put in. And I want to ask you, what happens if the chains survive and your kinds of businesses do not? What you think that does to a community? Tanvi, I'll start with you.
That just makes for a really boring community, in my opinion. And those chains are not the ones that are funneling any sort of taxes, any sort of money into your local fabric. You know, I'm here to stay. I employ local people. In fact, most of my employees live in the city, you know, and there's something to be said about that. You know, the money that we spend locally goes right back into your schools, goes right back into your taxes. It goes back into your roads. I mean, it's a whole infrastructure. So, I mean, if people don't realize that, you know, if you're not keeping your money local, we're not moving any further. So it's really important that people continue to shop local and continue to support the businesses and the services that are offered by people that they know from, like, being their neighbor or someone that they know. You know, a mom and pop shop is most important right now than anything else.
How realistic, Tanvi, is it that we could be left with a mostly chain economy at the end of this?
Man, I'm gonna say I'm being cautiously optimistic. I don't think we're gonna go there. However, I'm not sure. You know, that's difficult to say, but I'm gonna be optimistic and say I don't think we're gonna go there. And I really, really, truly hope that we pull through this.
Erica, how do you see that question on chains and? You know, again, not to just denigrate change, but there is a difference here. And how do you see it?
Yeah, I think it would be tragic. But I, too, am optimistic. I will say that what I have seen is one of the silver linings of all of this is that people have really voiced opinion about shopping small, shopping local. And on my end, I've seen a ton of that. And I believe people more than ever realize that if I don't take, because you know what, it takes a little bit extra effort sometimes. It takes even a little bit more money to not get on your, you know, you go to a big chain or you got to really maybe sometimes think about it. But I think that people more than ever have really seen, wow, if I don't do this, what is my community going to look like? Or, you know, the businesses that they love, you know, they may not survive this. I'm going to do everything that I can to frequent their business, buy a gift card, shop online, pick up at the curbside if that's what they're doing. And I've seen it personally, and I see a lot of people really wanting to support other small businesses, especially now that the holidays are coming up.
What about you, Charles?
I think my elevator pitch would just be that small businesses are inherently community driven, and they're almost always businesses of passion, which is to say that they are started and run by people that truly believe in the mission of the small business, and it's not necessarily always driven by profit. And so being able to have that and put that back in the community is probably one of the most valuable things for that community. It gives them sort of an identity, if you will. It's somewhere that you can go and say, I can go frequent this, and it's not necessarily something that I can get in Denver, Colorado, or wherever else you happen to be. It's uniquely Rochester. It's uniquely Monroe County. And so, for instance, I mean, I feel like my wife and I, with our education, we probably would be better in a different industry, being a wage worker or anything else. But that's not what we're passionate about, where it's not necessarily what we're passionate about. And so we're able to trade that security for the passion in our business. And we give that directly to our community members. Whether or not we're going to be a chain environment after all this, I don't necessarily know. I do know that passion will always come. And so eventually it's not going to be that way. I can say truthfully that no matter what, the small businesses promote the economy. Small businesses are the fabric of the economy. There will always be a lot of small businesses. There's always people that are willing to start this dream for themselves. Whether or not I will be on it or the other colleagues that are on this program right now will be a part of that, that remains the question. And that's where I hope that we do make it and can be a part of that wonderful future.
I want to ask all three of our guests, Charles, Erica, and Tanvi, stay in touch with us. And listeners, that goes for all of the small business community, for workers and owners as well. We want to know how you're doing, especially as things ramp up in the winter and things get more difficult. Charles, thanks for making time for the program again.
Thank you so much.
From Rochester Parkour. Erica, thank you very much, and good luck to you at Juniper Gifts and Local Art.
Thank you.
Tanvi, good luck to you at Peppermint Boutique. Thanks for making time for us.
Thank you so much.
All right, more connections coming up.